In this new segment of Advisor Revelations, the DPL team will discuss how to evaluate new solutions and address current challenges and the strategies that can help you grow your firm and AUM.
Hello and welcome to the Advisor Revelations podcast. I'm Jackson Badley, a Regional Vice President here at DPL Financial. And today we're going to discuss how advisors like the ones that myself and our guests today work with kind of digest the idea of lifetime income, some of the nuances that come with it, specifically talking about, you know, the difference between annuitization and lifetime income, some of the tax treatments, and a few other topics that we'll dive into. And so with that, I'll introduce our guest today, who is a consultant at DPL. Been here for about 6 months now, a little less.
Yeah, right around six. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Matt Robinson. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me here. Excited to talk about the topic today.
Perfect. So before we start the discussion today, I want to remind everyone to please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming app for updates. And if anything that we talk about today interests you, be sure to connect with your DPL consultant at our website, www.dplfp.com. Cool. So let's get into it, Matt. So our listeners have a little bit better understanding of your background and where you've been in your career thus far. Could you just share a little bit more about yourself and what you do on a day-to-day?
Yeah, certainly. I got my start in the insurance industry about 10 years ago, kind of going business to business, selling insurance, worked my way up, got licensed with Merrill Lynch, worked there for a little bit. And then when I really got into the annuity side of the business was when I went to LPL Financial. Worked on the consulting team for insurance and annuities. So talked about, hundreds of products pretty much at that point. And then a few years ago, got into the RIA space where I was able to talk more on the advisory annuities and continue consulting. And, you know, 6 months or so ago, joined DPL to kind of expand and continue that kind of consulting role. So I've talked about every annuity product that's probably out there and, you know, really enjoyed, you know, working on the DPL side of things as well. So like I said, happy to kind of have this conversation because like I told you earlier, I think it was today, I literally just had this conversation this morning. So very applicable.
Yeah, definitely comes up a lot. So with that, let's go ahead and get into it. I know I mentioned we're going to talk about the ins and outs of lifetime income. And I think to start, let's go into one of the more common misconceptions that we hear from advisors, especially the ones that don't do a lot of annuities. And that's the difference between annuitization and lifetime withdrawals. So Matt, could you just shed a little bit of light on both of the forms of income and how they differ?
Yeah, certainly. So we'll start with annuitization because that was in basically the foundation of when annuities were created. They were built to be that kind of lifetime income when you got to a certain point. And, you know, when you do your studies, insurance licenses, things like that, that's what they talk about. You know, annuitization is basically handing over the account to the insurance company so that they can provide you a check every single month or year, however you want to get it set up. And, you know, we call it annuitizing the contract. And that really just hands over your control of the funds, but you get that guaranteed payout. There are certain options that you can choose from, whether it's single life, joint, spouse, how much they get, and some other benefits that are kind of tacked on, which of course affects the income payout. But in the end, you know, that's going to be the most basic form of utilizing an annuity. I think when I was kind of digging around today, maybe about 5 to 10% of contracts that are out there in the world today are ever annuitized. Some of those are maybe forced annuitization in some manner, or, you know, we look at the annuities that are basically annuitized right away for income. That's really what you're looking at for the annuitization of a contract. But yeah, very few and far between that we see those.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with the sentiment about how little contracts are actually annuitized these days. And so when you position annuitization up against what we now commonly see as lifetime withdrawals, can you just give us a basic rundown of how the lifetime withdrawals work in comparison?
Yeah, certainly. So what you're going to see a lot of nowadays, especially in the last 10 to 15 years in the annuity space, are going to be what we call income riders or lifetime withdrawal benefits. And you can kind of hear the difference of how that's set up in the name with the, you know, withdrawal being in the name for the income rider. And so basically what you're going to see with the income benefits nowadays are you're going to take withdrawals out of the contract, but the account value, your actual dollars in the annuity contract itself are going to stay invested, whether it's a variable annuity and they're invested in sub-account funds, or you know, an indexed annuity where they're tracking an index. Those allocations are going to stay managed by the advisor. And if for whatever reason, you know, somewhere down the road, there's an event where the client wants to access their money besides the income rider, they do have that option. And then of course, another big benefit of that is if it, you know, carries on for a while, they still have an account value and they pass, the beneficiaries have an account value that they can reach out and take a lump sum on, or, you know, if it's a spouse, so they can do maybe continuation, but you have a real dollar amount that is maintained inside the contract while you're also getting a lifetime income that's guaranteed for life. So the big difference, of course, is the control that you maintain over the assets and how they kind of pay out, as well as, you know, you'll continue investing as well. So big benefit on that front for the lifetime withdrawal benefit.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for that. And so going off of the lifetime withdrawals that you just covered, I think an important topic to cover in this space now, especially in a high interest rate environment, is an income base in the traditional way of a VA with an income base that rolls up for X amount of years and you take income off of an income base versus deferral credits, which we see more commonly in like FIAs and RILAs these days, which are especially popular because of the high rate environment that we're in. So could you help advisors understand kind of the difference between that classic income base on a VA versus the deferral credits that we're seeing now that are very popular?
Yeah, absolutely. So traditionally, when the income riders became a very popular vehicle to utilize for guaranteed income, you were going to have these step-up benefits, whether it's 5, 6, 7%, usually about the amount. So you're going to have a hypothetical value that we generally call the benefit base. And so no matter how your contract's account value, what you were actually invested in, performs, you're going to get at least that 5 or 6% increase every year. And for most of these contracts, they were set up to take income at age 65. So you'll have a percentage that you can take off of that benefit base. And that was your guaranteed income rider. And they worked great for a very long time. We have been in a bull market, but we were also in a lower interest rate environment. So these benefits were, for all intents and purposes, especially on the variable annuities, built to pay out like 5% for single life at 65. You know, maybe your contract performed better, maybe the step up performed better, but those were the two kind of pressures that were going onto the guaranteed income. And most of them have a cap at 10 years of roll up, you know, a lot of different things and levers that the insurance companies can pull to customize these income riders. But that is traditionally what we've seen in the industry up until, I would say, probably the last 5 or 7 years, with a few exceptions. Of course, there's been some other ones out there. And so that is your typical guaranteed lifetime withdrawal benefit rider on, you know, especially variable annuities that were really popular, especially in the mid 2010s. And so how that differs from what a lot of what we see now and a lot of what we've had and the industry's had a lot of success in this higher interest rate environments are the contracts that are going to bypass that guaranteed step up. So that benefit base is basically eliminated. So you still have your account value, everything that you're investing in, and that's going to be one of the drivers of performance and income. And then you're going to have an income percentage payout that you're going to have a deferral credit for, basically. So how that looks in comparison to the old step up benefits is you're going to start off with the withdrawal percentage, maybe around 4.5-5% if you're maybe in your 50s. So already kind of starting where some of the better payouts are for the other products. And each year that you do not take income, your income percentage continues to grow, as well as your account value, hopefully, whether it's through an index annuity, a RILA, variable annuity with, you know, your sub accounts, is continuing to grow. So you get performance on your actual account value, which is your actual money, which is also good. And you get a higher percentage payout. So maybe at 65, instead of 5% for life, you're getting 7, 7.5, even higher, depending on how long you've had the product. So that income percentage number is just so much stronger, but you do kind of forfeit that guarantee on the step up. So there is a kind of a push and pull between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And so going kind of back to that income-based discussion, we know that we've commonly seen that income-based with VAs, you know, having underwater income benefits where the income base is much, much higher than the account value. I know you and I both have seen a lot of success in replacing those old VAs with high income bases, especially now. And so could you shed a little light on why that's kind of been the case as of late, and additionally, why advisors shouldn't be closed off to exploring other options just because of that high income base.
Yeah, certainly. So kind of like I mentioned, this is especially true for the variable annuity sector, which, like, going back to the mid-2010s, because these are the ones that are coming out of surrender, starting to be utilized for the benefits that the client's paying for generally. The benefits were decent, decent step-ups or decent withdrawal percentages. And during that time, we've also had a very good run in the market. So even some of those benefits that have heavy investment restrictions, and, you know, with some of the fees that get up to 3.5%, 4%, they've still performed well enough to be within maybe 25% of that hypothetical benefit base number that the income is coming off of. So account value is still in a position where we can analyze it in the higher interest rate environment for an exchange to try to improve that income for the clients. So kind of go back to the same example. If I have a contract that's maybe a $200,000 benefit base and I'm getting 5% at 65, yeah, I can get $10,000 of guaranteed income. And maybe I've been doing that for a few years. Products perform well. Now I'm 70 and we get a chance to look at it. Well, you know, at 70, we might be able to get the client 8% on their withdrawal rate just based on the account value. So even if the value is only 150,000, so we're 50,000, 25% in the hole, you know, we're getting them $12,000 of annual income. So yes, they're in the hole, but we're still improving their income by 20% when, you know, they're what we call underwater on that benefit. And that's really a product of the interest rate environment when they purchased it, the market performance since then, and then our current interest rate environment as well. So I always tell my advisors, even if are happy with the way things are performed, there might be a way that we can increase that payout. All we really need to do is just take a look at it. Some of them, of course, are going to be perfectly fine the way that they are, but there's a good chance, you know, another success that we've seen is, hey, maybe you had a single benefit and we're able to add the spouse in and keep the income the same or give you a little bit of a bump. And just having that peace of mind by making a joint income is also a benefit that we've seen. So very strong solutions out there to at least take a look at, whether you're happy with it or not. And again, if it's in the right position, we're going to tell you that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And so now, as we start to wrap up a little bit, I think there's a couple, maybe a few FAQs, things that we commonly hear from advisors and they wonder. So the first topic I'd like to just have you briefly brush over is, well, what is the tax treatment of those lifetime income withdrawals?
Yeah. So that kind of goes back to, you know, how the contract's set up. Obviously, for anything that's on the qualified side, you know, it's going to be treated when it's fully dispersed, just like any other qualified account. It's really when you get to the non-qualified annuities, especially ones that have been maybe possessed for a while and they kind of keep rolling over, exchange from annuity to annuity. We're obviously carrying over some cost basis with that. So for your non-qualified annuities, they're going to come out LIFO, so gains first, whenever you start taking income. So what that might look like, if you have $100,000 cost basis, $200,000 annuity, that you're taking these lifetime withdrawal benefits, because again, withdrawal being the key word there, you're basically just taking a portion out of the contract until we're going to get down to potentially $0. And that's where this kind of changes. So beginning income is going to be any gains will be the first, and it'll be taxed at ordinary income. Once you get to your cost basis and start taking the withdrawals out of basically that part of the money, some of that money is going to come out tax-free, could still have some gains in there, but most of that will be tax-free income at that point in time. And then once the account depletes, goes to $0, everything that the insurance company is paying you out is basically gains because there's no value left in the contract. And those are going to resort back to ordinary income. And this, of course, is one way when you look at annuitization versus these lifetime withdrawal benefits, that's going to differ a little bit. Because when you annuitize a contract, you can get an exclusion ratio to mix in some of those gains. But at the same time, you're handing over that control. You will have basically no more gains to a degree within those. And that's kind of how that differs when you look at an annuitized contract or like an immediate annuity compared to guaranteed lifetime income.
Yeah, perfect. And I think just one other thing to brush over that advisors come up on a lot, it's not truly lifetime income, but when you have a client inherit a non-qualified annuity, I think we've seen that same exclusion ratio used. So on a non-qualified stretch, as we call it, could you just talk a little bit about the tax treatment there?
Yeah. So non-qualified stretch, for those who may not know, is a tool for whenever a basically a non-spouse or one of those special beneficiaries inherits a non-qualified annuity contract, they're going to have a few options to take out the money. If you don't do a non-qualified stretch, this feature that we're talking about here, there's a five-year rule to take out the money from the contract. Of course, a lump sum is always on the table. But like I said, if you're carrying over high gains with maybe a low cost basis annuity, like I said, maybe it's $100,000. In this example, they've had it for a few decades. The gains are up to like $300,000. So obviously, you don't want the $200,000 tax hit. So you can spread it out over 5 years, take lump sums however you want. The money just has to be out in five. Well, if you go with the non-qualified stretch option, then what that's doing is it's taking the beneficiary's life expectancy and we're dividing the payments up based on the IRS tables over their lifetime. And so they can spread out that taxable income to them by utilizing this payout. So the money stays invested inside of a non-qualified annuity, whether they want it to be a, you know, an index, if they want protection, to a variable just for max growth. And based on how they want to take the money out and the IRS table, they will take a portion of the funds each year while still allowing the contract to grow and kind of kicking that can down the road of the big tax bill. And they can, of course, cash it out at any time as well. So it's a very flexible way to pass annuities down to the next level. You do want to make sure if your clients have annuities or you're working with the family that this is also kind of taken care of within the first year. You don't want them to sit around too long because there is a limit on when you can actually get into that non-qualified stretch as well.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And kind of circling back to lifetime income, probably one of the most common questions we get is, Matt, do you have any contracts that have an LTC benefit? And without, you know, naming any specific carriers or products, what does that landscape look like right now?
Yeah, it's becoming more of a common topic, I would say, for the LTC enhancements, or used to some of them I would more label a nursing home benefit. So there's a little bit of a defining line depending on the contract. But for some of these income riders, they do have enhancements, usually about double of the current income payout, whatever that may be at the time. And if they qualify, can't do 2 of 6 activities of daily living, which is the overarching kind of qualification for even your traditional long-term care contracts or your hybrid LTC policies. That's what triggers those benefits as well. And it really just provides that extra income in a time of need for the clients. These are kind of added in benefits. These are not like pick and choose with a lot of these income riders. And, you know, it really, the way I kind of position it with my advisors, you may not need it, but if you're going to get double the income, especially like we said right now, the rates are high, we're getting good income anyways for a lot of these solutions, it's just going to take a lot of that pressure off at the time. It's going to provide them with income. Then there's different variables of how many years and the way that they can use it, but it really is an added benefit. And in some cases, especially for uninsurable clients, finding a way to maybe position this with a portion of their portfolio for potential future guaranteed income can be a very powerful story as well. So maybe you have a really good accumulation with that kind of the income deferral withdrawal percentage that we talked about earlier. And so you can go a while down the road. And if you do have that LTC incident, you can kind of go to the income and then get double. So you're getting high payout plus double for that long-term care planning need. And it's just a good fallback option. And if you don't ever need it, it's going to have a good accumulation for you as well. So there's a lot of different ways that you can utilize it in planning. The long-term care insurance policies are always going to have their benefit, but some of them are expensive. You have to come up with a lot of cash upfront to really fund it in an efficient way. Or you have your traditional LTC policies where even the new ones that are out in the market today could continue to increase in price and could be a use or lose it type policy. So it's a good alternative kind of approach to LTC planning, or in some scenarios, it's just a kind of the icing on the cake and just a great added benefit.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for that. Yeah. And with that, I think we should wrap up here. We hit on a lot of the most common topics that advisors are bringing up to us in the context of income. And so any thoughts or closing comments before we get out of here today?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing I would say is for advisors who especially have clients with some older annuities, whether they're the agent of record on it or they know that it's sitting somewhere else outside of their purview, is if we can get a chance to just take a look at it. Right now, we're in a great situation. Interest rates have held up even in the last few Fed meetings. We're seeing some rate increases more on the fixed and potentially index side, but that means income should hold strong for now. So especially going into year end, if you can get your hands on those, you know, annuity statements, just have your consultant take a look, be like, hey, this is my client's situation, whether they're taking income now or when they want to. Give us a chance to look at it. Just make sure that, you know, we know what options could be out there, whether they want to make the move or not. It's just great to go ahead and take one last look at it before, you know, another Fed meeting in December in 2025 with a potentially declining rate environment. Right now, it could be a great time to do that final analysis for income replacement. And of course, if you do have a client that's looking for maybe a little bit of a guarantee, now's a great time to, you know, see the options as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that sentiment. So with that, Matt, thank you again. I want to thank everyone for listening today. And again, let's connect at www.dplfp.com. And don't forget to subscribe for more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.